Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 275, and we have a big announcement, which I will get to in due time. But we're also going to talk about a serious problem in van life, and that is mice. We'll also talk about fizzy water, not the kind that you want, but the kind that happens when you turn on your faucet and then suddenly it's carbonated. And a place to visit that is a pilgrimage for every fan of Steve. I have to apologize for not being here for a couple of weeks. I thought I would take a week off, and I planned that, and I warned you that I was going to be in Canada, and I was going to be busy, and I wasn't going to be able to do the podcast for a week, and then bad things happened. I have had a whole bunch of health issues since then, just this endless stream of things where I've got new teeth, and I've got orthopedic issues, and I had a cold, and it was all at once, and it was not pleasant, but I am on the upside of it all. I have my lovely new teeth, and I have a plan for treating the orthopedic issues, and my cold is waning. So, I'm back. So thank you for your patience. However, it does kind of lead into the big announcement, which isn't really all that big, but I've done 274, this would be 275 episodes of the show, and numerous bonus episodes and guest appearances and so on and so forth, and I have to make a decision as to how much longer I'm going to keep doing this podcast, and I'm torn on that because I have a lot of things that are interfering with my ability to do the podcast lately, and they're increasing. And that's a problem. Some of them are in my control and some of them are outside of my control. And so what do I do? I want to keep the podcast going, and yet I am doing less van life than I used to, which I am not a fan of, but that is a requirement of my reality. And that means I have less content to offer you, and I also have less time to do the podcast. It doesn't take that much time. I basically will dedicate the day Wednesday to the podcast, and because I've done it so many times, I've streamlined things, so it can be fairly efficient. But it definitely takes a few hours. And the hardest part is, on top of that, I spend the entire week in every idle moment thinking about the podcast. What am I going to talk about? What would be the best way to approach this topic? I do research, things like that. And actually, that's the time I'm having trouble with, because those idle moments are being filled with thinking about other things that are more important in my life right now. So, when I announced that I would have a big announcement in episode 275, I didn't know what it would be. I did that so that I would make a decision. It was basically a deadline for myself. Well, now you've announced it. You got to decide something. And I left the door open that I could decide, hey, I'm going to commit to another 100 episodes. Or, hey, I'm going to cancel the podcast. This is the last episode. Or whatever. And what I've decided is neither of those things. What I've decided is that I'm going to continue doing the podcast. I'm committing to episode 300. That's already been done. Beyond episode 300, I'm going to have to wait until I get to episode 300, and then we'll see what happens. But I thought the thing that might solve everyone's problems here is for the podcast to continue, but maybe with less of me. And what I'm thinking, and this may work, it may not, is that it's time to have guest hosts, or co-hosts even, if somebody was willing to commit to that. And it would work like this. Every other week, perhaps, you would hear me, and then every other week, or if I said that wrong, but you know what I mean, somebody else would be on the podcast. And, you know, we had Big Rob do an episode long ago, and he did a great job, and I'm thinking that's kind of the idea. And so I don't have like a big black book filled with people that can do this. I'm asking you to do this. And here's how it would work. Well, you know the format, right? You've listened to the podcast. You know how it works. I would want you to continue that format. You don't have to do every segment, but I would like you to do most of the segments. If you don't have a tale, leave the Tales from the Road segment out. If you don't have any news, leave the news out, all that stuff. But that's it. Just record yourself talking about each one of the normal areas that the podcast talks about, and send it to me, and I will publish it. I will give it a run through to make sure there aren't any glaring problems and make sure the file format is okay. And anybody who's interested in this, I will give you information on, you know, which file format I need, which really isn't that restrictive because I'm going to run it through my software anyway, and it will output what I need to upload to the server. So that part's not a hard thing. The only thing I would demand is that you avoid politics and religion and don't lie. Keep things as truthful as you can be. As a payment for you, this is not a money-making venture here. The Buy Me a Coffee link brings some money into the podcast, which I appreciate. Those people are what's keeping this thing going, and they keep ads off the show, and that's all great. But for you, what I would offer is that in the product review section, you could put your own affiliate links in there, and then any of that money would just go straight to you. So that would be the kind of revenue sharing thing. I would ask you to mention the Buy a Coffee part, and that would go to the show. But anything that you did in the product review area, you could put your affiliate link in there. And I know that sometimes, depending on the affiliate link, that can make a lot of money for people. I haven't actually pursued that very much. But I know some folks who put a lot of work into that and cultivate relationships can actually do very well there. So that's completely up to you. This is an idea. I've had many ideas in this podcast, and a lot of them haven't worked. You can see my YouTube efforts to see that I never did quite get that to work, and that was mostly a time thing. But I think this might work, and it might not. I don't know. We'll see. So I have two requests of you. If you're interested in possibly guest hosting, and maybe you have your own podcast, I'm open to all ideas, but if you're interested in that, if you're interested in producing content for Built2Go, get in touch with me. I'm Jeff at built2go.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. And we can have a conversation and we'll see what we can work out. Also, I really want to hear from listeners about what they think about this idea. Obviously, you've become accustomed to hearing my voice on the podcast. I created the podcast, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But things change. And this could be a change for the better. And then long term, you know, maybe 50 episodes from now, maybe at some point I fade away and I'm no longer on the podcast every week. Maybe I come back as a guest once in a while. Whatever. Or maybe I finish building this project I'm working on with the truck cap and I'm out there on the road and I have time to just keep up with the podcast every week. Maybe that's the future. I don't know what the future is. We live in uncertain times. And I think that's true for everybody at this point. So that's the big announcement. It's not earth-shattering, but it's kind of important to this podcast. And the fact that you're listening to this podcast means you have some interest in it. And so I really want to hear what you think about this idea and if you are interested in participating. So again, you can get a hold of me at jeff@built2go.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. And I thank you very much for everything, to all of you for listening these 5-6 years now that it's been, and especially to the folks who've donated to the show. You have really improved the quality of the show by keeping the ads off. That was terrible while that was happening. I was not happy with how that went. So thank you to everyone, and thank you to everybody who is considering becoming a guest host or even a co-host. You guys might be the future. We shall see. But I also wanted to talk about mice. What is the relationship between this and mice? Well, there sort of is one. My van died. If you've listened to recent episodes, you know about my story with the Sprinter. And this last weekend, I finally got over my dread and dove in there and started emptying out the van. And I will talk more about that in the Tales from the Road segment. But I want to bring a special highlight to one aspect of that. And that is mice. There were mice in my van. Two different species, in fact. I believe I had deer mice and field mice. I'm not entirely sure about that. I'm identifying them mostly by droppings. And, mice are bad things to have in your van. Some of you who have never had mice in your van, I suggest that you have not only been fortunate, but it's because you move a lot. That is the number one way to keep mice out of your van. Keep moving. And I'm going to explain why in just a second here. So as I was taking things out of the van, here is what I found. Under the hood, the insulation has been chewed to death. All the insulation that's on the hood, it's not almost all gone, but it's almost all damaged. It has holes in it. There's a black layer, and then that's like the outside, and then inside there's the actual insulation. The black layer has been chewed away. A lot of the insulation has been removed. There are actual holes. Mice did that. I had a really nice wool blanket in there that was kind of the cover for my bed seat combination thing. They chewed holes right through that. That was expensive, and I'm not happy about it. I've had several rolls of toilet paper become mouse nests, which isn't too surprising. I had a collapsible sink, one of those sinks that is, it has kind of a joint in the middle of it, and you can collapse it. It's like made out of a rubbery plastic. Yeah, they chewed all that up, so that sink is history. My folding dog pool that I use as the base of my shower, yeah, they chewed that up. They seem to really like vinyl for some reason, so that's gone. The suction cups that held the shower up, if I use that outdoors, yeah, they chewed those up just enough so that I couldn't use them anymore. And the real problem, they chewed up and ate every single kernel of an entire box of microwave popcorn, and that was part of the problem. I didn't know it was in there. It fell behind a container I had in a cabinet, and I didn't see it. And the mice found it, and that's what kept them going and coming back. And later on, when I removed the battery, because I'm going to put that in the truck cap, I found out that they chewed up the temperature probe to the solar controller, the thing that tells the solar controller what temperature the battery is, and they ate my shunt. I had a shunt that would tell me, you know, it was a very simple shunt. It was a Hall effect shunt that just told me amperage one way or the other way. Yeah, they chewed that up too because, hey, why not chew that up as well? Let's get it all. They did a lot of damage, and the reason is because the van sat in the same place for a long time. I mean, that's really the worst thing you can do for everything. Leaving your vehicle sit for a long time is very, very bad for it, and we've talked about that on the show many times. That's what killed my van ultimately, and the mice are trying to finish it off. So what do you do? How do you prevent this? Because sometimes you have to leave your van someplace. All right. I have said this many times, and I have not been disabused of it yet, but anything with 100 solutions has no solutions. And there are 100 solutions at least to keeping mice out of your van, right? So you've got the Irish Spring thing where, oh, they don't like Irish Spring, oh, and you put that around in your van, and then I hear other people saying, I tried the Irish Spring thing, the mice ate it. Okay, and then you've got Uncle Billy Bob's Gus or whoever, somebody's secret formula that keeps mice away. Nah, it doesn't. Peppermint oil. Oh, they hate peppermint oil, except when they're drinking it. The thing is that some mice don't like some of these scents, but none of them deter all mice. And you might have luck with it. Oh, the vanilla air fresheners. That was a good one. Nice and simple solution. Folks, if that worked, none of these other things would exist because everyone would just do the very easy thing of putting the vanilla air fresheners in there. So they don't work. People will report that they work, and they've reported that, oh, I put this in and I haven't had any mice yet. But that's correlation. That's not causation. Unless there's someone does a double-blind study with these things, we're really not going to know that they work. But I am really sure they don't work just based on a meta-analysis of reports on these things. So the first thing you want to do is exclusion. You want to try to plug up every single hole that you possibly can with either spray foam or maybe putty or steel wool. You have to be very careful with these things. You have to use the right thing in the right hole to keep the mice from getting in. But that is almost impossible. If you have barn door style doors in the back of your van, there's a gap. There has to be between the two doors where they meet at the bottom. There's a T shape that is made between the bottom of the doors and the middle of the doors where they come together. You can put all kinds of weather stripping and stuff there, but the mice can still get in there. Any hole the size of a dime is big enough for mice to get in, and that doesn't have to be round. They can get in flat spaces too. Exclude as much as you can. Don't make it easy for them, but they're probably still going to get in. What happens when they get in? They want two things from your van. They want food, so try not to have any food that's easy for them to get to. In the Airstream, I've taken to putting all food that can be attacked by mice, like not cans are fine, but like food that's in pouches and things like that, and microwave popcorn, I put in containers that the mice can't get into. And for me, the mice have not gotten into the fridge yet, so the fridge is a safe zone. But that's about the only safe zone I have. So that's one thing they want is food. But they also want nesting materials. They want a safe place to raise their young. And that's a tough one because your van is filled with nesting materials. You are nesting in there. So blankets, pillows, insulation, carpet, any wiring, anything they can chew on is attractive to them. And there's really no way to prevent that because you want that stuff too. So if you are in a situation where you can't move your van regularly, this is what I recommend, and not everybody's going to like it. You buy those really, really, really cheap paper plates, which I buy in bulk. I get them in the big 150 plate packs, and I use them for everything. I use them for eating, and I'll usually use two or three if I'm eating off of them. I'll use them if I'm working on something like I'm super gluing something. I'll use that as the base. I use it to hold like nuts and bolts if I'm taking something apart. I mean, those plates come in handy for a whole lot of things. You can also use them to start fires too. So I start with that. I put that on the floor or in a cabinet or whatever, and then I put a mouse trap on there. A plain old everyday mouse trap, although I have moved away from the wooden ones and gone to the plastic ones. They seem to be more effective and they're easier to set and they're less scary. They're less likely to snap on you. And one of the brands is named Jaws, I think. If you look in the stores, you'll find them. These work really well. Some of them have a little hole in there to put bait in. Something to attract the mice. Honestly, these aren't necessarily even necessary. The mice will check out the trap anyway. You want to put the traps against a wall because the mice don't like walk through the middle of your floor. They're going to go along the edges and they will just simply crawl over the trap and trigger it and get whacked. But the bait helps. And they sell bait, and I've used it. And when I opened the jar of bait, I realized it was just molasses. So you can use molasses, or you can use peanut butter. Those are the two things I like the most, because they both don't evaporate, and they just stay there. And that means that months later, they're still effective. So peanut butter, if you have that laying around, is easy. I have some old expired peanut butter that I keep. That is my bait for the mouse traps. That works well. Now, these things are not foolproof, and they are, in my opinion, the most humane way to deal with this problem, because everything else is less humane. You could say, oh, why don't you get those traps that save the mice, and then you can let them out. Well, in order to let them out, you have to go to the van every day, and I'm not able to do that. And I'll leave out a whole lot of the details, but I worked at a place that had those traps, and what happened was basically nobody ever looked at them. So the mice would get trapped in there and then just slowly starve to death or die of thirst, basically. That doesn't seem particularly humane. Glue traps? Horrific. Horrific. Not something I would want to do to any creature. I mean, here I am talking about killing these things, but I want it to be as instant as possible. And then I consider it recycling in a way. I put the mice outside for animals to eat if they're killed in my van, and I'm just saving a step because, you know, the circle of life, etc. But I want it to happen as quick as possible, and these traps seem to do that. Poisons? No. I know that decon and all those other poisons can be effective, but there's a chance of secondary kill. There's a chance a dog will get in there or a kid, or I'm just not going to deal with that. And you also have the risk that I'm dealing with this in another situation entirely, where somebody had a house that they wouldn't be able to go to for 6 months, and they put decon everywhere. Mice got in, ate the decon, but they couldn't get out of the house. The way this stuff is supposed to work is that it makes the mice incredibly thirsty and they seek water outside the house. But the way this house is, they couldn't get out of the house. They got trapped. And he came back and found dozens of dead mice stinking and fly blown in one part of his house. So yeah, none of that. So that's the best thing I can come up with, is these traps. And what I will do is, when I'm going to leave the vehicles for any period of time, I put those traps out. And the reason I put them on the paper plates is because it's easier to clean up. I don't have to touch anything, and you know, it just prevents any other problems. But again, these things aren't perfect. Sometimes they catch the mouse not in an ideal place. And well, this is a little freaky, but I'll tell you, because that's how we are here. I had a problem in the Airstream where the traps would catch the mice, but something else would come and eat the mice. And I think it was probably a mink at this point. I don't actually know, but Could it have been other mice? I don't know. But I would find pieces of mice, not a mouse. And the trap itself would be just covered with blood. And one time I found just the femur of a mouse. That was apparently the trap had caught the mouse on its femur somehow, on one of its legs. And that was all that was left. Just the bone. One little bone was all that was left. Something had eaten the entire rest of the mouse. And I'm assuming it was a mink. It could have been another mouse. Mice are somewhat cannibalistic if that's the best food source they have. But anyway. So this is a serious problem. Mice can do very serious damage to your van, and you have to deal with it because the problem will increase. Those big long tails mice have, they're not prehensile. They're not really useful for much, except that they leave a scent trail. And the mice can follow that. And if they see a well-used trail, the mice know two things. This is a safe way to go because a mouse has been by here many times and nothing's happened to it. And that mouse is going this way for a reason. And that reason is probably food or nesting, the two things mice want. So, to wrap it up, mice, best way to avoid them is to move your rig often. But if you have to leave your rig and there's not much else you can do, then in my opinion, the best thing is traps that kill the mouse as quickly as possible. Set several of them. And yes, every time you come back to your van, you're going to have to open the door and be like, okay, what's in here? But that is the least unpleasant way of dealing with the problem that I have found. And I'm happy to hear your suggestions. If you have ideas, better ideas, or if you're just horrified that I would kill mice, well, the horrified that you're killed mice part, wait till you hear the Tales from the Road segment, and then get in touch with me if you feel like you need to. Thank you to everybody who has visited buymeacoffee.com/builttogo and bought me a gallon of something so that this podcast can have no ads. You folks make the podcast ad-free. That makes me happy and everybody happy, and I really, really appreciate it. Had a particularly generous donor sign up for a monthly donation this week, which I absolutely am thrilled by. It has motivated me, and you can do that too. The monthly members really help out a lot. So if you're interested in supporting the podcast, visit buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And we will have no ads here. Thank you. Van life news. Well, okay, it's not news. I still can't deal with the news, so we're going to skip the news. But I do have an offer for you. So in taking apart my van, I have found things that there's no reason to leave in the van that are very specific to the van. These are things that will only work in an NCV3 Sprinter, which is from 2008 to 2016 approximately. If you have an NCV3 Sprinter from those years, I have some things that you can have for free. First come, first served. You just have to help me out with shipping because I don't know how that's going to work. So that means, unfortunately, this is going to be a U.S.-only offer because mailing things out of the country or into the country right now is a nightmare. So I'm going to stick with this. Local pickup is available. If you're in Illinois, we'll figure something out. But let me tell you what I've got for you. I have a set of rubber floor mats for the front of the van. They're all weather. They are laser fit kind of, you know, they're designed to fit the van. They're really rugged. Obviously they're not brand new. They've got dirt on them, but they're very rugged and comfortable enough, and they hold up and stuff. So I don't remember the brand name, but they're not WeatherTech, but they're similar. They are light gray in color. Those are free to a good home or a bad home. I don't care. I also have a side window cover. This is for the window on the sliding door. It is it's kind of a royal blue color. It does add some color to things, and it is magnetic. You just put it up against the window, and the magnets hold it in place, and then it rolls up. It doesn't take up all that much space when you take it down. You do kind of have to take the whole thing off. You can fold one level down to look out, but it's not something you're going to leave on there unless it's fully applied. I got it off of Etsy. It was custom made, and it has been great. There's no problems with it at all, so that's available. For the rear door windows, I have two magnetic covers that are gray, and these are meant to be left up all the time. You can kind of fold them up, and there's a strap, and then if you want to cover the window, you unfold them and cover the window. Those have been great as well, and that is for the rear door windows. I also have two mosquito-proof vents for the front windows. These are the kind that you roll down the windows and then you place them on the windows and roll the windows back up, and it leaves a vent at the top. They are hard plastic, so they do maintain security somewhat. I mean, obviously someone can break the glass, so it's no more secure than the broken glass, but it would be just as hard to break these as it would to break the glass. So it's as equal, it's the same security you had anyway. These are pretty good quality. They're a really good solution. They fit perfectly, and I don't think any bugs are going to get in. And the idea with these is if you have a max air fan, you can put that on exhaust, and it will suck air in from the front from these windows. And you can actually drive with them on there or whatever. So I have two of those, and I have a reflective roll-up front windshield cover, the kind that goes on the inside of the van. The windows on these Sprinters are huge, so this is actually a pretty big thing. And that's why all this stuff is vehicle-specific. None of it will fit any other vehicle, except maybe the floor mats, kind of. But I have all those things available for the first person who contacts me and says, hey, I would like those. Just help me out with shipping. Let's figure out how to get it to you. And if you're in the Chicago area or in the Illinois Valley area, we can easily arrange a pickup or whatever. And if you're not, we'll figure out how to mail it to you. We'll just have to do some research on that. But I don't want to leave the stuff in the van. The van's going to be donated to NPR. That's where I figured it was the best use. And whoever gets the van doesn't need this stuff. I don't think the van will ever be a camper ever again. I suspect it's either going to be parted out, or if somebody is willing to fix it up, it's just going to be a cargo van for things like painters or carpet layers or something like that. They don't need this stuff. So let me know if any of that stuff is interesting to you. Tech Talk. Have you ever turned on the water in your van and noticed that the water's kind of carbonated? I've noticed a whole bunch of you just had little bells go off over your heads. I saw it from here. This is a fairly common RV, I'm not going to call it a problem, maybe an issue, a phenomenon. But this happens with the pumps that most of us use. These pumps that are on-demand pumps where you turn on the faucet and the pressure drops and a switch trips inside the pump, the normal RV pumps. This phenomenon happens for a few different reasons. The most common is that there is some antifreeze in the lines still. And antifreeze, which is propylene glycol, not ethylene, propylene glycol, it's a foaming agent. It does actually cause things to foam a bit. It's not harmful in any way. It's just a little weird. So, especially true the first time you turn on the water heater, this will happen a lot. You may notice that the hot water does this and not the cold. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the antifreeze. You just let it run. I mean, that's the solution. You let it flush. But there's no harm. You can just let it happen naturally as you use the water. That will flush it out. The stuff is not harmful. You can actually drink RV antifreeze. I don't recommend you do that. It's a food additive in the end. You will find it in things. But that's all it is. It's just a little weird. However, there is another time when this can happen, and this happened to me, and that's what caused me to think of this here. In the Airstream, we run exclusively off the water tank. We don't have a water hookup. So every time I go down there, I bring water from Chicago that's filled up at the tap in a giant bladder in the back of the truck, and then I pump that into the Airstream. And that works great. It's a decent solution for us. It's a little annoying, but for our situation, it's fine. This week, though, I noticed that the water started doing this fizzing thing. And we haven't de-winterized the rig. In fact, it's the end of the season. We're about to winterize it. So where did this fizz come from? And I know what it is. I sanitized the system. I added bleach to the water. And that is what caused the fizz. But it doesn't do it every time. So what was different this time? One of the reasons can be is if your water is contaminated, like has a lot of bacteria in it or whatever, the bleach will kill all that, and the dead bacteria causes foam. At that point, if that was what was going on, you really need to flush the whole thing out, run a high concentration of water and bleach through there, and then flush it out with fresh water as much as you can. But that's not what happened in my case. What happened in my case is I bought the wrong bleach. The bleach I used was dripless bleach, or no drip, I forget what the word is, no spill bleach or something. They add a thickener to the bleach so that it doesn't spill as much, because spilled bleach, you know, can get on your clothes and you get those little white dots and stuff. Well, it's that thickener that's foaming. That's the problem. The thickener is what's causing the foam. So again, this is not harmful. And yes, you can, well, you're not supposed to drink bleach. No, you're not. However, bleach is a very easy and effective and safe way to disinfect water tanks. And you can look up how to do that properly and stuff. But anyway, I just want to bring up this fizzing issue. Those are the causes I'm aware of. There may be others. In general, it's completely safe, especially if you use the system I do, which is I don't drink the water that comes out of the tap. I just don't find a reason to. I brush my teeth with it. That's not that big of a deal. I take showers with it. But for anything drinking or cooking, I'm using bottled water that comes from a known good source, whether that be a tap that I know is good or water that I've bought, depending on the situation. So, there you go. If you've been wondering about the fizzy water thing, that's where it comes from. Tales from the road. Okay. This is a big one. I'll briefly recap the story of the van. In 2021, I bought a 2011 Sprinter, a 144 wheelbase high roof cargo van, 2500. Did I say 2500? I think I did. That was an ambulance. This was an active ambulance, and when I bought it, it was still ready for service as an ambulance. It hadn't had anything removed other than the radio and the EKG. Everything else was in this thing. The sirens, the stretcher, the suction. The O2 tanks were missing, but the brackets were still there for them. And I wanted to turn this into a camper van, and I did. I had a lot of trials and tribulations. I learned that turning an ambulance into a camper is actually much harder than it looks, because everything that's built in there to be an ambulance is super strong and really hard to remove. All those brackets for the stretcher are such a nightmare. Anyway, I fought through it all and did that, and I got it all done, and I went out on the road and had great times. But the van was never reliable. I had engine problem after engine problem after engine problem, and the repairs were incredibly expensive, and finding places to repair it was really, really difficult. And even the Mercedes dealer that I had been using, which charged outrageous rates, was kind of telling me they didn't want to work on it anymore. And I promised myself that I'm going to make one more effort to fix the van up and make it perfect, but next time there's a major repair, that's the end of the van. And that next time happened to be in the spring. After the van sat all winter, side note, I had surgery and I was laid up and I couldn't walk, so I was unable to go to the van and start it every couple weeks, which is what I normally do. It sat for several months, and when I went back and was finally able to turn it over, the engine light came on, and it was the swirl valves, which is this exhaust control anti-pollution thing that's at the bottom of the engine and the intake manifolds. They're bad. And I looked at how much it would cost to fix those, and the range was up to $8,000. On top of that, the van was in limp mode, and the nearest place I could find to work on it was 100 miles away. When I added everything up, I decided that's the end of the van. Heartbreaking decision. This is the van I want. I love this van. It is completely comfortable for the things I want to do. I love driving it. However, there is reality to consider, and reality is that this thing is a hole in the ocean in which I'm throwing money, which is usually what a boat is, but whatever, we're going to go with it. Okay, so having made that decision, I thought about, you know, what do I do with it? Do I sell it as it is? Do I just donate it? Whatever. And after long deliberation and conversations with my wife, I decided that I'm going to take out all the working bits for the camper part and put them into something that can go on and off the back of my pickup truck. And we'll put the details of that aside, but that's what I decided to do. This weekend, I finally had a couple of days where the weather was right and I didn't have any other obligations. And yes, I was late on the podcast, but I really needed to get this done. I went in and took everything out from the back of the van that had anything to do with camping that I could reuse, which was solar controller, the battery, the sink, the water pump, some of the lights, the fan, not the Max Air fan, the actual, I have like a boat fan in there that's just a regular old fan that came down, a bunch of the hooks, the shunt, although the wiring is ruined, I may never be able to fix that again, the refrigerator, the Olympian Wave 3 heater that I actually never even used, the propane tank, all that. It's actually easier to tell you what I left, and I'll explain why I left them. I left the Max Air fan because it was very difficult to get it in there, and I'd probably destroy it trying to get it out. And if I got it out, there'd be a big hole in the roof I'd have to repair. So when I did the math on time and everything, the Max Air fan stays. I also left the diesel heater. Why? I could use the diesel heater because they're only $100, and it's not worth $100 for me to take it out and then not have all the parts I need to install it. No, the heck with that. I'll just get a new diesel heater. I want a different style anyway. So congratulations, folks. Whoever gets this van is going to have not one, but two different heaters in the back. There used to be three. Did I mention I liked redundancy? I think I said that at some point. I took down some of the IKEA shelving. I took every bit of decoration that was in there. There wasn't much. And I also left the seat, the bed futon that I made, simply because I had to cut things and it's custom fit for the van. And again, it's not that expensive. It's not worth taking out. And so that's it. I have not yet, but will remove the solar panels and the inverter and the battery-to-battery charger. Those I have to take the seat out, and I'm going to do that later, but I will get that done. I also took the CB and the dash cam. I'm going to leave the radio, even though it's a nice radio, and I even put a subwoofer in. I'm going to leave all that simply because I don't have any place else to put them, and it's a lot of work to take them out. So, yeah, anyway, I now have this big pile of stuff that I have to figure out how to fit into this little truck cap, but that's another project. But here's some things I learned about emptying the van. First off, yes, it's heart-wrenching. I mean, it felt like riffling through the pockets of a dead friend to find something useful, you know? I mean, it was like, well, he's dead now. He's not going to need that pocket watch, is he? So rummaging, let's see what's in his wallet. And, okay. And it was a horrible feeling. And not to mention the mice. So every 2 seconds I'm opening something and like there's beady eyes looking at me and like, oh, jeez. Now, talked about mice, right? So there were mice in the van. The logical thing to do would be to put mouse traps out, wait overnight, and then come back and remove the dead mice. Sprinters have a lot of compartments, especially up front. And under the passenger seat, there are actually two compartments under there. And the lower one that's in the footwell, not the one that's attached to the door, that's a whole separate one. I opened that, and there was just this pile of fluff and insulation and toilet paper and whatever else the things have been chewing up. And it moved. It was moving. I was like, okay, there's a mouse in here. But I had, you know, it's the passenger side door, so the door's open. I'm like, okay, let me just, like, poke at this, and the mouse will run out. And so I do, and the mouse runs out, and it has 5 baby mice attached to it. This is a mama mouse. And the mice are, like, suckling, but the mama mouse can move while the mice are suckling, and it kind of scurries off with the babies. And I'm like, oh, jeez. So I'm like, so imagine this. If I had put traps in there, I would have come back to find a dead mama mouse and then a whole bunch of wriggling, starving baby mice. And yeah, I'm sorry. I can't deal with that. So I'm like, all right, we have to find a way to get this mouse out with all the babies away from my campsite, intact, out of the van. And I thought, okay, I'm going to make a mouse house. So I took their nesting material, put it into a nice firm cardboard box, cut a little mouse hole in it with a flap that I could close, and then I put a trail of peanuts leading up to the nest and put some peanuts in the nest. And I thought, I'll wait overnight. Mama Mouse is going to eat the peanuts, going to crawl in there and have a nice nest. And in the morning, I'll go get the box and I'll close that flap, and I will take the box and drive for a little bit and then let the mice out somewhere safe. Actually, it wasn't even going to let them out. I was just going to leave the box like under a log or something, and they'd have their own little house there. It'd be as safe as they could be in the forest where they belong. And that isn't what happened, because Mama Mouse is too smart for that. Mama Mouse came out and ate all the peanuts and then did not move into the house. So I have left it there, hoping that a little more time will encourage her to move in there. As it gets colder in the nights, we shall see. But I have that problem. And as it happened, later that day, while cleaning out another compartment, I found Mama Mouse again. She had built an entirely new nest in a different compartment. And this time when she ran off, 2 of her babies were left behind. She took off with 3 of the babies, but left 2 behind. And they're on the floor, and I'm going, And I'm like, oh, come on here, guys. Why is wildlife trying to prevent me from getting rid of this van? I mean, first the wrens in the truck, and now the baby mice. I'm just like, what? Come on. Give me a break. So, all right, well, I've got these two baby mice. I can just put them in the bird feed. No, I didn't do anything like that. I took the baby mice and put them on one of those paper plates I was talking about and put a washcloth kind of thing over them so they'd have some warmth. And I put them somewhere where the mama mouse could easily find them. And in 5 minutes, they were gone. Mama mouse came and got the babies and then went off into the van somewhere. I don't know where she is now. But, yeah. This has not been fun. And I think one of the hardest parts for me, after leaving the batteries on a charger for 2 days, I was able to get them charged enough that they could start the van. When I turned the key, waited a couple seconds for the glow plugs to light up, and then turned it to start, it started right up. It started right up, and it purred, and it sounded like my old van, and it was happy, and I was like, this is my last drive in this van. All I was doing was moving it into a position on the property where a tow truck could get to it. It was going to be a 20-second drive. But that 20-second drive felt right. It felt like I was where I needed to be, behind the wheel of that van. Everything was comfortable. And yeah, the check engine light was on. And I know the accessory belt wasn't attached, so the alternator wasn't working. And I knew all that stuff. I knew it was an illusion. But for 20 seconds, I got to enjoy that illusion. And now it's sitting in my driveway waiting for the NPR tow truck to come and take it away. Although I have to get that other stuff off first. So by the next podcast episode, the van will be off to its new life. And it's regrettable. I wish it hadn't been that way. I wish Mercedes were a company that made more reliable vehicles. I wish the people who owned it before me had taken better care of it. I wish mechanics weren't so afraid of diesels. I can't tell you how many mechanics I called and said, oh, we don't work on diesels. I wish the last guy who repaired it had done a better job. I wish I knew more about mechanics myself and I didn't screw things up wherever I screwed them up, etc., etc., etc. But at some point, you got to cut your losses. And I told my wife that this van is like that girlfriend that you've had some great times with, but you know she's bad for you. You just know that. And yet when the phone rings, you're compelled to answer it. And you know she can talk you into doing something really stupid. And at some point, you just have to block her. You have to block that phone number and not answer the phone. And that's the point we're at with this van. I'm blocking the van. Oh, man. So, you know, you fall in love with things and you have to pay the price of detachment. That's kind of what Buddhism is all about. And though I'm not a Buddhist, I do believe there's truth in that. And that's the state I'm at. With my 2011 Sprinter 2500, 144-inch wheelbase, high roof, X ambulance, and now X camper. A place to visit. So, if you're not familiar with Camping with Steve, he's one of, if not the most popular YouTube channel out of Canada. And Steve Wallace is his full name, is a guy that likes to go camping. And he goes camping with a van sometimes, but usually not. He has a school bus he converted. He camps in all different ways and in all different places, such as culverts and bushes and abandoned gas station and mines and behind signs on the highway and the islands in the highway. I mean, any weird place he can find to camp, he will spend a night there and make a video about it. But he often mentions a place that I've never been to until recently called Canadian Tire. All the Canadians know exactly what I'm talking about, and they may even be laughing at this point. Whereas those of us down here are like, what's so special about a tire store? Well, let me tell you. I love Canadian Tire. I have never loved a store this much since, I don't know. I mean, I love Menards, but I would trade Menards for Canadian Tire in a heartbeat. And yes, they do sell tires. But they sell everything else, too. They've got food. They've got camping supply. They have guns. They have fishing equipment. They have yard accessories. I mean, they have clothing. They sell shoes. They bought the company that used to make Hudson Bay blankets, so they're going to have all the Hudson Bay stuff soon. People have called it the Walmart of Canada, but it's not, because Walmart's in Canada. Walmart is the Walmart of Canada. No. This is something specifically Canadian and yet really, really cool. Actually, most Canadian things are really, really cool in my opinion, so I regret saying that, but I left it in the podcast just so you'd know. Yeah, this place is a wonderland for me. I mean, I literally could do 99% of my shopping there, and I would buy a whole lot less stuff from Amazon if I had access to a Canadian Tire. I ended up buying a bunch of stuff there. I bought mosquito nets. I bought one of those mosquito nets that goes over your hat. I bought another one that is a hat. I bought a Canadian flag, which I had an adventure with on the ship as we were leaving. I hung it over the side of the ship, and the people who were unhooking the ship saw it, and they waved at me and said, "Hey, thanks, bud." And they were like really thrilled that, you know, these Americans on their fancy cruise ship would bother to show a Canadian flag. It was meaningful to me, so I was very glad that I did. And I wanted to buy more, but this was all stuff I had to fit on an airplane. Anyway, if you're in Canada, you owe it to yourself and to humanity itself to visit Canadian Tire. See where Steve Wallace gets his stuff, and see why he gets it here. Now, the Canadian Tire's reputation, so far as I can tell, is that they sell cheap stuff. And it's like, you don't want to get... It's like, all right, let's put it this way. It's the Harbor Freight of camping and hardware stores, I guess, is the best analogy. But there are times when Harbor Freight is really exactly what you need. And Canadian Tire, boy, I would really love to have access to it. So, anyway... Canadian Tire, if you are in Canada, visit one. They're almost everywhere. The one I visited was in New Brunswick in St. John, and there were two of them in St. John, which isn't the biggest place in the world. I'm sure you can find one. And just plan on spending an hour just wandering around and being like, ooh, oh, because they had stuff that I have never seen in American stores. And I know most of it comes from China. I'm not deluded. But it was a very cool experience, and it felt good to be there. And the people were super friendly there because, you know, Canada. Resource recommendation. One of the things I found in the van that I'm actually keeping was a stair tread. So this is a rug that you put on a stair, or you put on each stair, basically. And they usually have a rubberized coating or some other way to attach them to the stairs. And I've had this in my van since I got it. And I realized taking it out, what an amazingly useful thing this was. So this thing, the stair tread, and I don't have a link or anything because it's something I got at Menards and I don't think they have them anymore, but the reason this is a resource and not a product review is I want you to understand the concept of this. In most vans, you have a sliding door, and you step down onto like a step that has plastic molding on it, and then out of the van. And that step often has anti-slip plastic molding in it, and it is really hard to clean that stuff. Like, dust and dirt gets in there, and it really holds on to it, and at least in my experience. I've tried brushes and vacuums, and it's just a pain in the butt. It's often mud, and it gets caked on there. And stair treads make the perfect cover for that one spot in the van. The one I bought fit perfectly in my Sprinter. I didn't have to trim it. I picked one that was long and narrow, and they exist, and I put it there, and it just sat there. And then all I had to do was take it out and shake it out and put it back, and I had a nice clean van again. And I thought, this little simple thing really enhanced my van life. It was a place to put my boots. It was a place to put things that were like a little bit dirty that were, I wanted them in the van, but I didn't want them in the living area necessarily. So I would just put them on this tread rug right in the footwell, I guess you'd call it. It's not really a footwell. I don't know what you call it, but that little shelf as you open the door. I don't know. This thing just really worked well for me. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, go to Amazon and search on tread mat, and you will see different examples of this. You have to find one that fits right, or you can trim them. But having a little rug there, I found to be a super useful thing. And my new setup, I'm not going to have any need for that kind of a thing. I have another use for this rug. That's why I'm not giving it to you. But think about it. It's a good thing to do to make your van more livable. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 275 of Built to Go. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. We do have a Facebook group. It is called Built to Go, a Facebook group. Pretty easy to find. And we also have a Discord server, which is called Built to Go, a Discord server. Links for both of those are in the show notes if you are looking on Podbean or at builttogo.com. Until next time, remember the words of David Bowie, who said, "And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through."